We want to welcome all of our listeners along the network. We're here live from Fargo at the Roger Maris tournament. And Sid, I want to thank you. That's a great tradition we have back at the station. Every Sunday, Sid brings in the rolls. And here this morning, Sid got up early, found a bakery in Fargo, and brought in all these nice rolls over there.
Baked them myself.
Baked them yourself.
Well, this radio station up here, what's the name of it?
We can't forget. KFGO.
KFGO. They
shouldn't have to
give them a
that.
Hand for coming up with the rolls and coffee. Leave your money as you walk out.
You know, it's amazing how much noise poor people can make.
Yeah, you're right.
Actually,
well, Tom Gavaris and Dave Jarzina handle this thing, so you know it'd be fouled up.
No, actually, we've got a very nice crowd here and a great set of activities planned. Started last night and goes all the way through tomorrow. We hope the weather clears up a little. And so let's get into the sports talk.
Let's just talk for a minute. It's like old times walking into the coffee shop, and Whitey Herzog's there, and Bernie Allen's there, and Frank Quilcy, and Bob Allison. We all pray for Bob to be a lot better. He's in a wheelchair right now. Great, great guy who just had some problems. But and Mr. Knight and Karen Knight are coming in at 2:17. I guess Bob Costa's doing the show from here tonight, which will be, I don't know if it's on your station, but it's on WCCO. I'm sure it'll be here. But it was kind of a sad night last night at the Met. Metrodome with Mr.
Oh, we are going to talk sports.
Yeah.
Okay. I go through this every week, usually not in front of a live audience. Yeah. Sid, the conventional wisdom, and you and I were responsible for this as much as anyone else, was that the Twins would not get in any prolonged losing streaks because they had Erickson and they had Morris. Well, we're halfway through that. Erickson had a tough game last night.
Well, for some reason, he didn't have a normal zip on his fastball. I don't know why. And this is a low ball hitting team, the White Sox, and his ball was sinking pretty good, but not as fast as it normally is, and they were hitting everything. And in that stadium, when you have 50,000 people there, like you had last night, 50,600 some, the humidity and the heat from the bodies, for some reason, makes the ball travel a lot farther. And you get the ball up in the air there, like Junior Ortiz hit a pop fly and almost went out of the ballpark, and Kirby Puckett hit a home run. Chili Davis hit one. Herbie, I'm glad to see he hit one, but just wasn't Scott's night. He struggled until the seventh, and then he had a chance on a bunt, and he slipped. And I think if he'd handled that bunt, it might have been a different situation. He made a great catch on a bunt, but you can't expect a 23-year-old guy to win every game, and he's done one heck of a job. He's still the best pitcher in the American League, without a doubt, based on his record. He still should be the starting pitcher in the All-Star game. I think he will because Kelly's one of the coaches. But, Scotty, people don't realize that these players are just human. You get 50,000 people, the big buildup. He's in that big stadium, and everybody's got their eyes on him. And it was a little tough, that's all.
So let me ask you a follow-up question on that, because the first year they built the Metrodome, there was no air conditioning, and the ball really traveled. And there has been a pattern. When it gets filled up and it gets warm in there, for some reason the ball seems to travel. And last night, as you said, balls were flying out. Balls that looked like routine pop-ups were being caught back on the warning track.
Well, the air conditioning don't work when you have that many people, and I don't think you just can't keep it cool. In fact, they tell me the concourse is just hotter than heck there, Bill Lester. Spend a few of your bucks and cool it off. I mean, everybody's complaining they won't go out there, and even your concession business has got to drop down. Dick Erickson, turn it up a little bit. It's supposed to be hotter there again today. I know your budget's okay. You got a new head of the Metropolitan Sports Facility Commission, Bill Hunter. He doesn't care how much money you spend. So cool it off again so people can go in there and get cool.
How would you know how hot it is in the concourse? You're there in that press box with the rest of the freeloaders.
I was checking it out last night, and everybody was complaining. Turn on the air conditioning in the concourse. And so, the only objection I have, those smokers, I hope they sweat good so they don't smoke.
Sid, Jack Morris is pitching today. Now, here is the veteran, and if you're going to have a guy to stop a four-game losing streak, he's pitched very well. And the strategy would be that you got guys like that, they can come in, and you should not be able to get into prolonged losing slumps.
I think you'll do all right today, but the White Sox are hot right now. This American League West looks like a seven-team race. Every team's in it. And if you want to check it, the genius, Rob Anthony, who does a great job succeeding Mr. Me.
This is the good genius, not the bad
genius. Good genius, yeah.
Okay.
Come up with a lot of stats on, and Andy McPhil was talking about this the other day, is streaks. Texas wins 14 in a row, they lose 7 or 8 in a row. California wins several in a row, they lose a few in a row. Seattle the same way. It's been kind of a pattern. And maybe the Twins are in for that right now. But California lost last night. The club I worry about is Texas. I'll tell you what. Happy for Tommy Greve, and he was general manager of that team, who's got a lot of heat for no reason at all. But they've come up with three of the greatest rookies in the American League. a young 19-year-old catcher by the name of Gonzalez. No.
He's an outfielder.
Outfielder's Gonzalez. The catcher is Rodriguez, right? And third baseman named Palmer. All 19, 20 years old. And like the Twins just completely handled them this spring, but they didn't have Gonzalez. And since he come back, and now they brought those other two kids up, they're tough. If they get Nolan Ryan in shape and they get Witt back, they're going to be tough to beat. They beat California last night. They went into Oakland and swept Oakland three games. So it's going to be a good race all the way. I still think the Twins are going to have to make a deal. They need a little more punch in that lineup. And I still think they need a left-handed relief pitcher. And there is a kid at Portland, not Nagel, who might be the guy who throws a good forkball. And they're going to need some help. They called Sereno up now with Dan Gladden hurt, and Gladden's injury won't help him. He's been really hot during this streak, hit about 330 and has driven in a lot of runs and played great defense out there. Losing him won't help him.
Said, although he's not left-handed, you would think that if Richard Garces had reported to Portland that he was, at one time a year ago, the brightest relief prospect in the minor leagues, and he's going to lose a whole year.
He's in Orlando now, I think, and not setting the world on fire. But they need somebody to get out a left-handed hitter, you know, one guy to go in there, and I think they'll have to do that. I think Mr. McPhail, as Mr. Kelly calls him, I think he'll have to make a deal if they want to win the pennant. I think they got to find a little more punch at third base. They just don't have the punch there, and I think this, that they need that left-handed reliever.
Sid, you spent a lot of time talking to the Twins brass, the minor league guys. What do they say about the third baseman at Orlando? He was, I think, their minor league player of the week. He's leading the league,
Garces,
I believe, in RBI. I think it's Chio Garcia.
Yeah, Garcia, yeah. Well, we were talking about that the other day. They brought Gaetti up from Orlando. He broke in the lineup the first time at bat. He had a home run against Texas. I mean, I think that maybe that kid's ready. I guess that's a very tough league. I've talked to a lot of people who played in that league. Tom Kelly managed that league. He thinks if you can win in that league and not pitch in that league and hit in that league, you can hit up here. The good example is you got two guys in a Twin lineup right now. You got Scott Erickson, who was there for a brief period, did all right, done very well up here. Chuck Knobloch played 1 year down there. He's playing second base. So maybe this kid can come up and do something for him. But I think Pags is doing a good job. He had a home run the other day. Scott Leyes is doing a good job. But most clubs have third basemen who can hit home runs. But there aren't too many around there. Maybe they can make a deal. Maybe these two guys will find themselves, start hitting a little better.
Sid, you got a copy, or you got a letter during the week, and I got a copy of it from Rod Wallace suggesting that they move the All-Star balloting out of the Metrodome and get it into hotels and around the communities. If you're going to have the fans vote, why not take it out and let the fans really stuff the ballot boxes?
I think they ought to do that. They don't do a very good job. Mr. Poss, when he designed that Metrodome, those not very many aisles in that Metrodome. It's all seats, and you want to get all the seats in, and it's tough for people to not only get concessions, but pass those ballots along. And I think that'd be a great idea. I think Rod Walsh, you get them in all the hotels downtown and get them, you know, out for where people can, where they're accessible. And I think it'd be a good idea. They're going to have a few players in there because Tom Kelly and Tony La Russa are very close friends. And I think that Tony will call Tom and say, who do you want on this team after the voting decides the starters?
You know, let's talk for a second about the voting. I've argued for years, and I still believe that it would be smarter in this age of computers to keep the fan vote, because I think it's important to have the fan interest, but let the fan voting count for a third, let the player voting count for a third, and let the media voting count for a third, because you just can't account for a fact that Kent Herbeck isn't currently, I think, among the top seven first basemen in the American League. That's ridiculous.
Oh, you're right. Actually, they vote on last year's records, and it reminds me of the Pro Bowl. I sit in that Viking locker room and watch these guys vote on the Pro Bowl, and it's the biggest joke of all time. They're yelling at each other, who's a good right guard? Who's a good left guard? They don't even know who these guys are. And they vote for them, and if it's their buddy, they vote for them. The Pro Bowl's a joke. And Tipple, the Vikings have had more Pro Bowl players maybe than anybody year in and year out, but it doesn't do them any good. They don't win any championships. I mean, there are some great players that make the Pro Bowl. No doubt Millard, Dolman, people like that, Anthony Carter, they deserve to make it. But a lot of guys, Randall McDaniel, but a lot of guys make the Pro Bowl or aren't Pro Bowl players, and they make it by reputation. The same way with that All-Star ballot. It just doesn't make any sense. But they got that promotion with USA Today, and they get a lot of money for that, and I don't think they'll change.
Well, Sid, at 10:30, we're going to have some fun live guests, some of the celebrities here. We're going to get all the people here in the audience involved in asking questions, and we'll remind people right now, from Fargo, you're listening to the Sports Huddle with Sid and Dave. Ron? Okay, we're back. One thing about working in a situation like this, it's pretty casual. I said, how are we doing on time? And our producer, Steve Eng, just looked at his watch and said, we're back on. We've actually got a great crowd here in Fargo. I have probably a couple hundred people in the room, and it's been raining
here. Aquitennial figures.
No, I don't think so, Sid. I tell you what, I'll ask you a question. Then when you take 5 minutes to answer, I'll count the crowd.
Yeah. I want to welcome a good friend of mine, and I want him to stand up for a little hand. Chuck Johnson. He started here in Fargo, went on to the Milwaukee Journal, and was sports there for many years. Now he's retired. He's up here to make a little talk tonight about Roger. He covered Roger in high school. Chuck Johnson and I, we used to have some great fun with Mr. Lombardi when he was coaching the Packers. And Lombardi didn't like too many sports writers, but two guys he cared for were Chuck and myself. He trusted us, and we would sit around after a game, after we kick everybody else out. We could hang around and have some good times with him. Chuck Johnson, stand up, will you, please?
Now, in the course of the morning, if there's anyone else here in the audience that Sid knows, come on up and we'll get a little plug in for you here.
And if any of Dave's clients, Mona Meyer McGrath, are here, come on up here. We'll get you a plug for sure.
And we appreciate your getting the name right there, Sid.
Things are tough. They shut their downtown office off.
Timberwolves. Let's talk about the Timberwolf draft. Luke Longley, that was the name rumored for a week, and turned out the draft went pretty much as expected. They got Longley. The fans at the Target Center booed, but the clips I saw, he looks like a ball player.
He looks like a ball player. Let's face the facts. They would have rather had Steve Smith or Doug Smith. Steve Smith, the kid from Michigan State, who I think would really fit in. And the one guy who's not that iron, Steve Smith, is a man who's arriving at 217, Mr. Robert Montgomery Knight. He was not that high on Steve Smith. He doesn't think Steve Smith will be that great a pro player, so maybe he knows what he's talking about. Doug Smith had a great year this year, but I saw him play, and I think you were there too.
At Richmond.
If there was a dog, he was it. He didn't do anything. I mean, they benched him 3-4 times. Norm Stewart kept on taking him out and telling him off. And Longley, I think, is a prospect for the future. Bob, one of Knight's men is coaching New Mexico, David Bliss, and we had a long talk the other day. He's very high on him. He coached him last year. Big, strong kid who can run 260 pounds. He hasn't played a lot of basketball, but we'll see what Jim Rogers does with him. He's talking about playing a double post and doing some things with him, keeping he and Felton Spencer in the lineup. I'm very impressed with Jim Rogers. I think he's going to do a heck of a job.
Sid, what do you think about the prospects of keeping all three of the big men on the team, and particularly Randy Brewer, in light of the salary cap issue?
I think they'll keep him. I think that, first of all, they're stuck with Randy Brewer's contract, $1 million-plus a year, and Randy Brewer's a good influence on that team. He's a good leader. And he can play certain centers very well, and I think they'll keep him around.
You know, the other guy they drafted, everybody was very high on him. They didn't know a whole lot about him going into the draft, but the more they got to see of him and the research they did, and this Myron Brown could be a real sleeper.
I think he will be a sleeper. I have to laugh. At Michigan, when you go watch a Minnesota-Michigan game, they always announce the Slippery Rock football score, and it gets a big laugh, but after talking to this kid, the Slippery Rock's a pretty good school. They have about 8,000 students in Pennsylvania there. And this kid, the statistic that impressed me about this young man was his three-point shooting. He took something like 160, 170 three-point shots last year and made about half of them. And that's what this team, the Timberwolves, need, in my opinion. Those three-point shots can turn these games around in a hurry. Team's got a 17, 18, 20-point lead in the fourth period, and all of a sudden somebody makes four three-pointers, and it's a ball game again, and they need a kid like that. I think he'll be a real he'll do a good job. I wanted to very much, for personal reasons, and one of my favorite guys is Kevin Lynch, played for the Gophers, followed him all through high school, followed his dad as a coach, and his mom has done some great things, and I wanted to see him in a Timberwolf uniform, because I think he could have helped them. But Charlotte took him. They tried to get him, but there's still a possibility they might deal for him.
The Kevin Lynch situation, the difference between last in the first round, first in the second round, it's really just one pick, but psychologically you'd like to be a first-round draft choice. But there is some suggestion Charlotte is heavy at guards, and Lynch or one of the other guards here might be moved.
Well, they've got Chapman, they've got Gill, they've got several other good guards. They're trying to make some trades. They haven't made them, but I think Kevin will have a hard time making that team if they don't make any trades. That's their strength in the backcourt. What amazes me is why, you know, they've done a great job with that salary cap, but why they don't have a rookie cap. I mean, if you're a veteran player like West on the Timberwolves team, and you're getting a good salary, $300,000-$400,000, which is good. But, I mean, the average salary in the league is way up there on $1 million. And some rookie comes in and gets $1.5 million to sign, and then signs a four-year contract for $700,000-$800,000. I don't think it's fair. Same way in the National Football League. They ought to pay the veterans, the guys that proved it, and not pay these rookies all that money. And that's one unfair thing, I think, in all sports. Here right now, a kid like McCarty, the kid that the Twins drafted, they've offered him $300,000 to sign. He's turned them down. His agent is waiting to see what happens with the rest of the players, and it's getting way out of hand, I think.
I heard Rodgers talk during the week, and one thing he said, they're going to move the ball up court, play an up-tempo game, and he said, you know, there won't be any guys playing 48 minutes. So you got the idea he's really eager to see what kind of ball player West and Glass really might be, and we certainly didn't have much opportunity to learn that last year.
Well, the one thing I think he understands that Wolfenson, Ratner, and Bob Stein are not that interested in winning games. They want to win some games, but not at the expense of developing these players. I'll never be able to figure Bill out. Bill could have been here forever if he just did that one thing, played these young players and played players like Glass to find out whether they can play or not. How do you know whether they can play if you don't play them? And a lot of players in all sports, if you get an opportunity to play, you might do it. And just like Paul Sorrento right now, they call him up here, and their plan is to send him back when Dan Gladden's healthy again. Paul Sorrento gets in the lineup, has 2-3 home runs, they're not going to send him back. And opportunity is the most important thing for these guys, and you got to give them a chance. And I think Rodgers will do it. I do think this, that the Timberwolves, this is one of the last years they can get by with not winning a lot of games. I think next year they'll have to win. They talk about all the marketing and all that stuff, and marketing is important, but didn't have much marketing last night. There's no free people in that Metrodome last night. 50,000 people came out to see Scotty pitch, and that's what you need, winners. That's what people like the best.
Said one last Timberwolf observation before our next break. I don't think we should let Richard Coffey slip off to Europe without some comments. Here's a guy who really fairly limited ability but made the most out of what he had and got a year in the NBA, and now it looks like he's got an outstanding opportunity in Europe.
Well, I was going to Turkey and play. He gets about $250,000. It's tax-free, and they're giving him a car and some other things. He's got some incentives. But what the Timberwolves are hoping that he gets a chance to really work on his shooting, work on certain techniques that he has to improve on, and they hope to have him back here. He's a good influence on the club. If you went to the Timberwolf games and watched them play, invariably, 15 minutes after the game was over, Richard Coffey and Scotty Brooks were out there for about an hour practicing, trying to improve on various parts of their game. So he's a good guy to be around. I think that'll be a good move, a good chance for him to play 48 minutes in every game and do well.
Well, we'll be back in a couple of minutes. We're broadcasting live here from Fargo, and you're listening to the Sports Huddle with Sid and Dave. And, Sid, let's turn the topic to football for a minute. The Vikings were able to come to terms, wrapped up the Herschel Walker deal, you know, fairly quietly. They got Kirk Loudermilk signed. It looks like they may go to camp with fewer signing problems than they've had in the past.
Well, I think Jeff Diamond's done a real good job. Mike Lynn did a good job, too, but he had a different approach to these players. And Mike Lynn says, take it or leave it. And Jeff has a little more diplomatic approach. And agents, not that Mike didn't do a decent job, because he did, but the fact is that Jeff Diamond's got a different approach. I think he'll succeed. As far as Walker goes, Walker didn't have much choice. Let's face the facts. His agent, Peter Johnson, shopped him around all the teams in the league. I talked to 5-6 teams, and they told him, say, listen, if you get $800,000, you're getting a lot for what you produced. And he got a heck of a deal with the Vikings. He got $1.7 million plus a chance to make another $400,000 if they go to the Super Bowl, and he does a lot of things. And I think this will be Walker's last year with the Vikings. That's my opinion.
Said the
they're going to pay that kind of money unless he can regain the form he's had years ago.
Vikings have three running backs we don't know a whole lot about. They got a kid named Terry Allen who got hurt in college, injured again last year, spent the whole year on the disabled list. Then Randy Baldwin, a draft choice. They've also got a kid named Hudson from Oklahoma State who led the nation in rushing. What do you know about these guys?
Well, I think if Terry Allen stays healthy, he'll play more than Herschel Walker. If Herschel Walker don't produce, Terry Allen will be the guy back there. Terry Allen's a big, strong kid, about 220 pounds, and he hurt his knee, and Dr. Dave Fisher operated on him, reconstructed his knee, and he's 100%. He's out there running every day, and they think a lot of him. They think a lot of Randy Baldwin. They think he can catch the ball. He'll probably replace Allen Rice on third down situations. Then Darren Nelson's been working his head off out there trying to get in shape. He's going to sign with him to be back. So I don't know too much about the other kid you brought up, but I think that Terry Allen's going to be the big surprise, and I think Darren played good here. That trade turned out to be a disaster, and one of the bad things about it took a guy like Darren Nelson out of that locker room, and he was such a good influence on all the players, loved by them all. And the day he and Jesse Solomon and David Howard and Holt and those people packed up and left was kind of a sad day, and I don't think they ever recovered from that day.
Sid, I want to swing the conversation now to a basketball. A group of people from Minnesota are going out to make a presentation to the NCAA, and what's behind the scenes there is an attempt to really get in sort of a rotation for the Final Four. And talking to the guys earlier in the week, they feel there's a good chance the Final Four could come back to the Minnesota again in the 1990s.
1998 is their target, and Indianapolis got up for 1997. I think they'll get a first or second round or a regional in 1995. David, let's face the facts. Dollars is the name of the game. That's what they're looking for. They are going to sell 50,000 seats to that April 4th and 6th Final Four here at the Metrodome in Minneapolis. And the gross sales will be the biggest in the history of the NCAA Final Four. $2.2 million are going to take in. And that's what they're looking for. They need a lot of money right now. I mean, the women's sports are necessary, but they don't take in any money. And they need big bucks. All these athletic departments need money to support those women programs, and that's one way they get it.
Well, since you brought it up, and it is one of your favorite subjects, the women are out there making a presentation to bring the Final Four to the Twin Cities in 1995. They feel they've got a good chance.
Well, I hope they get it, but we'll see what happens. See how many people will go. That's the biggest problem they have. I mean, I'm all for the women's sports, but they don't draw anybody.
Every time you say that, there's always a comma at the end of it. All for women's sports, but...
No, we need it. What's that hockey sport they're trying to get over in South St. Paul?
Ringette.
I hope they get it, but I hope they assess every parent, whatever the expenses are for the ringette. That's what they ought to do. And overnight, there would be a lot less interest in ringettes.
Let's get you on a subject you're a little more positive about here. I want to talk about Roger Maris. I know you've got some favorite Roger Maris stories. One of my favorite is trying to get him on the telephone, and I know Pat, his widow, was here last night, and somebody said, now, Sid Hartman claims that he called and badgered you and to be the only person to be able to get hold of Roger. And
didn't have to badger.
She said, yeah, that's true.
Didn't have to badger. Anytime I wanted to find out where Roger was, I called Raytown, Missouri. I had their number all the time. I go back a long time with Roger. I was up here for the funeral. It's the last time I was here, and I'll tell you, it was a lot of tears shed. This was a great, great person. It's amazing how the press, some of the press and the media can turn things around. Moose is sitting over there, and we're going to have him on in a few minutes, and Moose knew Roger very well, and Hank Bauer. And some of the negative jerks in the press, they can do things to give some guys an image. And Hank Bauer and Moose Carlin tell you I was always welcome at Yankee Clubhouse and knew all those guys. Mickey Mantle, for instance, always got a bad rap. Hank got a bad rap when he managed Baltimore, took him to the World Series, and overnight he couldn't manage. I mean, it's amazing what happens right now with this negative journalism. And Roger was one of the greatest guys you're ever going to meet. And I watched Roger grow up, and that funeral was one of the saddest things I've ever seen. I thought Mickey Mantle, as he helped carry that casket down that church, and I can't recall the priest's name, but what a job he did that day. Everybody in that room in that church was crying. I mean, Roger was such a great guy, and one of the sad days, one of the things I'll always remember is Roger called me about 10 or 15 days before he got died, and I wanted to talk to him in the worst way, and our switchboard operator somehow screwed it up, cut him off, and I never got a chance to talk to him. But he was one great, great person. And then they build up the story about that Mickey Mantle and Roger didn't like each other. They were very close friends. They roomed together for years. There was a great rivalry there and all that kind of stuff. But Bobby Knight's another guy. I mean, Roger Maris is as fine a guy as ever lived, and he couldn't handle the pressure from some of those negative people. Who can? I mean, they'll find fault now with Scotty Erickson last night after he lost the game. But Roger was a great guy. Pat Maris was always available anytime I called. And I used to bother those guys a lot, too, drive them crazy. But they always answered the phone and willing to talk to you.
It's all the time when you got Pat on the phone. Was it after Maris hit the 61st home run? Wasn't talking to anybody?
Yeah, Maris hit the 61st home run. He and Mickey were living together someplace in Connecticut, I think. I'm not sure where. And as customary with the ball players, what happens is when the season's coming to a close, they don't know whether they're going to the World Series or not. They usually move out of their apartments because they're going back to their hometown, and they go to a hotel. And I called Pat, and she said, well, he's at the Essex Hotel in New York. And I called, and the operator said, listen, I just started keeping track of the calls. He's had 111 calls, and he hasn't taken one. I said, well, try one more. No, she wasn't going to try it, so I called the manager. I said, do me a favor, just ask him. If he says no, that's fine. He took the call. But I never forget one day, and I don't know if Moose was playing with him then, but he was playing at the Met Stadium, and he hit a home run, and he ran around the bases. Sometimes Roger didn't think, and he gave the crowd the finger. And I walked in the locker room after the game, and Roger says, some other newspaper man came following, looking right away, right to rip him for it. And he says, get out of here. Come here, Sid. He says,
Sid was the only guy who understood sign language and knew him.
Yeah. He said, I want you, whatever you think I should say, you quote me in the paper tomorrow. That's what I'm saying. But he'd come to town with his dad, and we had breakfast many times at that Radisson Hotel, and it was just great. And I'll tell you what, that's why I love this business, because I've got great relationship with guys like those two guys over there and most guys in the business. I'm not out to kill them. They're human beings, and people don't appreciate the pressure they have and stuff like that.
Sid, we've got an extra mic up here, so when we come back from the break, we're going to have first Bill Scourin and then Hank Bauer come up and join us. I'm sure the audience will get a kick out of that. We're going to do that in just 2 minutes. For right now, you're listening to the Sports Huddle with Sid and Dave. Sid, the man on your right looks like he's still in such good shape he could be playing ball.
I'll sign right now.
He should sign. I recall Moose got his start in Minnesota, really. He played with the Austin team in the Southern Mini, and he burned that league up, and I think the Yankees signed Judd Austin, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
He gave me a nice bonus.
$30,000?
No.
How much?
$25,000. That's a lot of money in those days.
You're right, but nowadays you'd be worth $1,025,000.
I'll sign. I take my chances when I see some of these designated hitters.
I'll tell you what, I think you and Hank could both come back with those expansion teams and show them something. Moose, what about Roger Maris? You play with Roger Maris. Do you agree with me that he was an altogether different guy than some of the people in the press?
Everything you had said before is the truth. He was a great player, a great teammate, and a great competitor. I mean, man on first and third, and I'm hitting, and there's one out. I want Roger Maris or Hank Bauer on first base because I know I get an RBI because that second baseman or shortstop's going to get killed.
Not nowadays, though.
Right. And I got a lot of RBIs that way.
Yeah. You talk about Roger. Roger probably is one of the greatest all-around athletes ever to play the game. There wasn't anything he couldn't do. He could throw,
right.
He could run, he could hit for power.
And never made a mistake throwing to the right base.
You know, I was in Cincinnati in 1961, and Tony says, come on, hang around, we're going to have some fun. And I was just asking you if you were there, and there was a sports writer on the New York Post named Leonard Schechter.
I almost beat the hell out of him,
too. He was the biggest... He was one of the biggest jerks I've ever seen.
Right.
And Tony says, hang around, you're going to really see something great. So they haul the guy into the training room, they drop his drawers, and they shave him. And I'll never forget that as long as I live. Boy, that was funny. You remember that?
Yeah.
Huh?
Well, I remember in 57, we're playing the Milwaukee Braves in the World Series, and I got hurt. The first game, I hurt my back again. And we lost the first one, won the second. We go to Milwaukee, and we get on a bus leaving Yankee Stadium, and I see headlines in the paper, Moose Scourin will never play ball again.
Yeah.
Remember that? And you call me up.
Yeah.
My mom, my dad were so angry. They says, Junior. Well, they call me Junior.
Yeah. Tell you what, I don't think they'll ever be...
they still do.
Team as good as that 61 Yankee team. That was a great, great team. That's one of Tony's favorite subjects, you know. One thing about Tony... He ties in with those negative guys. He rips everybody. He's on that Yankee network, and he's ripping everybody, second-guessing everybody.
And he was my roommate.
Yeah.
Where did I see him? He called me up. He wrote a book, right? Calls me up. I talk to him for 2 hours. And another guy calls me up, talks to me for 2 hours. I get a book. I didn't even get a book. I saw Tony at Yankee Stadium, an old-timers game a couple years ago. I said, I had to go and buy that damn book. After 4 hours interview, I had to pay for the damn thing. And I made sure I read my chapter only, nobody else.
Talk what?
I wanted to see what he said about me, because when he was a rookie...
Did he quote you accurately?
I don't know. You know some of these guys dazzle, right? Tony, his rookie year, is with me rooming. He's rookie of the year. So next year, he wants to room with Bobby Richardson, because they played together in Denver.
Yeah.
So he had 220. I said, see, you had the sophomore jinx. You left Moose.
I'll tell you a story about
And he
that.
Always talked about him hit the Green Monster in Boston. I never saw him in batting practice. And I told him that, too.
You talk about that. You guys are in Minneapolis one day. You're staying at the Radisson Hotel. And I went out with Billy Martin, may his soul rest in peace. Another great, great, great person. A guy I had more experiences with him, boy.
So did we.
And
got to use more of that sign language.
I could write a book about him. And we're out one night. There's a strip joint on a Hempen Avenue. There's Mickey Mantle's there, Whitey Ford's there. And
not me.
Not you. And
I'm learning.
You're learning. Myself. So I says to Billy, I said, you know what? Quebec was pretty innocent. So was Richardson. Richardson's one of those, you know, strong Christians, which is fine. I'm not saying anything about that now.
He's around here.
It is Sunday morning.
He's here. Yeah. You better be careful.
So I give this stripper $25. We go back to the hotel.
You gave somebody $25?
I can't believe it either. David, I can't believe it either.
$25, we go back to the hotel. I knew one of the bell captains. I said, get us a passkey. And we have that stripper. She strips outside of Tony and Bobby's room, and we push her in the room. And I'll tell you what, what were they? They wanted to kill us. Hey, Moose, what else are you doing right now? I know you got plenty of money, but what about don't have to work, do you?
How about loaning me 50? I made a drop yesterday here. Me and Hank are going to buy a Little League field the next time we play blackjack.
Oh, is that right?
And Hank's buying the lights, I think, tonight. No, I'm in the trucking business in Chicago.
Are you?
Yes. When I got traded to the White Sox, it was my home, and now we do a lot of work for United Parcels.
Great.
And we have 50 brokers, and my boss gave me a tractor, and all of a sudden now it's been sick for the last 4 months, so funds are low.
Do you ever go back to Austin? Is Emil Scheid still living?
No, Emil died about 4 or 5 years.
Manage your team down there? That was quite a deal years ago. They used to have the Southern Mini League. And, boy, I was on a Rochester at a banquet here a few weeks ago. Joe Garagiola was there as the MC. And we were talking to the guys down there about that Southern Mini. A lot of great players. Gomez, the manager, was down there.
Well, Johnny Blanchard, Paul Giel.
A lot of those guys played down there. And Sam Jones. And that was a great league at one time.
Yes, it was. At first, I almost got run out of town because they started out bad. You know, it's 19 years old, and Purdue sent me to play semi-pro, and I struck out twice. The catcher dropped the ball both times. I beat the throw to first base. The Yankees offered me a bonus of $25,000. The Cubs didn't even offer me a contract. He saw me at 4 home runs off of 4 different pitchers in one game. The Sox scout didn't like my father, and I thank God because I got 7 World Series rings and a World Series watch. I'd have been a loser all my life.
Yeah, loser. Moose, you're one great guy. It was always a pleasure. I used to drive you crazy, but you never mind it. Call you all the time.
And, I know, and I appreciate what you've done for me.
Thank you. Now we'll bring Hank up here, another great guy. Hank Bauer. Give Hank Bauer and Moose Carter a big hand.
Okay, and while Hank makes his way up here, we're going to take a commercial break, and when we come back, we'll be talking live to Hank Bauer, reminding you we're live here in Fargo, site of the Roger Maris Tournament, and we'll be right back here listening to the Sports Huddle with Sid and Dave. Okay, Sid, we're back, and our guest right now is Hank Bauer.
Hank, we were talking about some great stories. Hank not only was a great player with Kansas City and managed the Baltimore Orioles to the World Series, but we were talking about former writers in New York, and there were some great ones, and there was one guy who was... couldn't hear very well, and his name was John Drebinger. And Casey Stengel would pull more stuff on him all the time. And one day we're having a little press conference. It was during one of the World Series, and Casey gets 4 or 5 of us together and says, I'm going to whisper. You're not going to hear one word I say. I want to drive Drebinger crazy. So we're sitting there. We're listening to Casey. We know what Casey's saying because he... And Drebinger is fooling with his hearing aid. Casey says, Drebinger says, I can't hear you. Turn it up. You better go get a new hearing aid. Drebinger runs to his suitcase. He had to get another hearing aid. Got about 3 hearing aids, and it didn't do any good. Finally, Casey told him I wasn't talking, so don't worry about it.
He was a writer that used to sit up in the press box and drink about 3 beers and get stoned, and our road secretary had to write a story for him.
You're right. He wasn't the only one like that.
There was a lot of them.
Well, you guys were buddies with those guys. We were talking about Phil Ferdinandi and... on the other hand, on the New York Post, you had the Rippers. They were trying to sell that scandal sheet and Milt Gross and so on. Hank, what about managing now? You think it's a lot different now than it was when you took the Orioles in the World Series?
Oh, I think the game has changed, and so has the personnel. I don't think I can manage today. I join the fraternity again in about a week, get fired again.
Too many prima donnas playing?
Well, you know, I think so, but I don't know how a guy can make $5 million and can't run the first base.
Yeah. How about the relief pitchers? In your day, the guys pitched nine innings, didn't they?
Well, I think more or less that's the manager's fault today. He goes out and says, give me five, and I'll go to the bullpen. Mm-hmm. I remember I had a guy pitching for me in Baltimore by the name of Milt Pappas. And we were playing a game in Yankee Stadium one day, and come the bottom of the sixth, we were beating the Yankees 2-1. And here come Maris, Mantle, and Pepito on the bat. So he's out there taking his warm-up tosses, and he's got the dry heaves.
I think I would, too.
So I went out, and I said, what the hell is the matter with you? He says, my stomach's bad. So I called the umpire out, and I says, he's sick. Give me a chance to warm up the reliever. And I brought in Dick Hall.
Dick Hall, right?
Yes. And we beat the Yankees 2-1. I come in the clubhouse, and the clubhouse boys come in the office and says, how come he took out Pappas? I says, hell, he's sick, and he's making me sick. He says, sick? He came in here and had two pizzas and two Cokes after you took him out.
Hank, I don't think there'll ever be another team like that 61 Yankee team. I really don't. Do you think there will be?
Well, you know, I didn't play for the 61 Yankees, but I think I was part of it.
Yeah.
See, I was in the Roger Maris trade.
Yeah.
And Moose didn't tell the story. We heard it the other day from Chichi Rodriguez that Moose was supposed to be traded to Detroit Tigers for Al Kaline. Yeah. And Moose broke his wrist that day, and the deal was canceled, evidently. And after the 59 season, well, I was finished anyhow. I was 37 years old. And I was
better than a 21-year-old.
And I was in the Roger Maris trade. There was Norm Seaborn, myself, Marv Thornberry, and Don Larson.
To Kansas City, right?
To Kansas City, which was where I live. It didn't bother me. But the big thing that bothered me, I played for the Yankees for 11 years, and I had to hear it over the radio that I got traded.
Well, Kansas City was kind of the Yankee farm club in those days, wasn't it?
Well, I think Dan Topping and Arnold Johnson were buddies in the canteen business.
Yeah. What, you talk about salaries, those great Yankee teams you played with, nobody made any money compared to now. I mean, it's unbelievable.
No, I hit .320 my second year up there, and he offered me a $1,500 raise. Yeah.
DiMaggio was telling a story one year that, what was it, Ed Barrow was the head of that team?
Yes.
He said he had a great, great year, and he cut him. And those days, the players had no leverage. Now you got that free agency thing,
well,
everything else.
That's the way the game has changed. And, you know, you talk about the ballplayers making all the money. I don't blame the ballplayer. I think if Moose and I was still playing, we'd be just like him. I blame the owners, and I blame television.
Yeah.
Plus the agents.
The owners are baseball owners. I can't believe it. I got to take my hat off to a guy like Marvin Miller. He got some great, great deals for the players, a great pension. Like Tommy McKenna was a trainer with the old Minneapolis Millers. Then he went to Washington. Gil Hodges brought him over to the Mets. I think his pension is way up there high. I've been on a mention what the figure is, but it's an unbelievable pension. How many years do you have in the major leagues?
22.
Well, do you still get the pension that these other guys get, or don't you get
the... Oh, you mean the new guys?
Yeah.
Oh, you sick?
Well, that's unfair. Why don't they do something about that?
Moose and I just got a 50% raise.
Oh, you did?
Yeah.
Well, at least that's
well,
good.
Well, and the best part of our pension was, it used to be that if I died, my wife would get half of my pension for 10 years, and then after that she'd get what I get. But now, if we pass away, she gets what I get. And Moose and I were playing golf 2 days ago, and it was lightning and thunder, and we wouldn't get off the course because our wives were well taken care of.
What about Roger? I think you knew Roger well because you lived in Kansas City, right? Right near him in Raytown? Were you right there, too? You and Whitey Herzog?
I wasn't very far. He was an outstanding ball player. Everybody knew that, but they didn't know Roger's makeup. He was a wonderful person. The only thing is, you know the New York press as well as I do. They put the pressure on you, and he couldn't handle it, and he got the sickness. And I don't think it's fair that he isn't in the Hall of Fame today.
He'll be in there. Don't worry. Take time.
Well, he'll have to go to back door if he's going to go in there.
Yeah. You know, I was in Baltimore when he still, I think, had 59 home runs, and that same Schechter tried to trap him, and Joe Reichler saved him that particular day. Schechter was saying to him, Roger, why can't you get, what would you think if a pitcher, a friend of yours, threw the ball right down the middle? Don't you think some pitcher should try and help you out? It won't hurt them at all. Trying to get Roger to beg, you know, for a fastball down the middle or something like that, or do something wrong. And then Schechter was telling somebody, well, I want to see what he says. I'm going to call the commissioner what his reaction to that is. And he started answering questions. And Joe Reichler at that time was at the AP in New York, mm-hmm. and a great guy. Ball players all loved him. Joe Reichler says, shut up. Don't answer that question. And he didn't. But
well, he was the type of rider. If you remember the old Yankee clubhouse, we had the big pillars in there.
Yeah.
And a bunch of ballplayers be talking, and he hid behind the pillars taking notes.
Yeah, unbelievable.
And that's when we all started going in the training room, and you and all the rest of the writers have to suffer because of one guy like that.
Yeah. Hank, always a pleasure to see you. Bring back a lot of memories to see guys like you and Moose, and great to come up here and do this for Roger. I know you come up here every year, you and Moose. Thank you very much for stopping by.
Thanks, Ted.
Okay. We'll take some questions from the audience after this break. You're listening to the Sports Huddle with Sid and Dave. Okay, we're back live here in Fargo, and we've got some people lined up to ask questions, so why don't we start with the young man in the front?
David, I just want to say one thing. That 61 Yankee Club, and then those clubs, Yankees, were such great ball clubs, and I'll never forget the year the Twins won the pennant in 1965. They had to beat the Yankees out, and they did. And I don't know. The old times with those baseball players were so different than things are now. I mean, you didn't have all the whole house, not all the free agents. Nothing wrong with the ball players now. The Twins got a bunch of great guys out there. But that was a different era than you have now. Go ahead, young man.
You mentioned 65 teams. Just for people who aren't aware of it, here in the hotel, for people who remember that team, there's Bernie Allen, Mudcat Grant, Bob Allison, and Frank Quillacy all around here. So with the rain here today, there's a chance to talk some fun baseball with people around the corridors. Okay, go ahead.
If Frank Viola becomes a free agent next year, do you think we'll get him back?
Oh, I say there's a slight chance. A fellow we pull that goes into her bank account and comes up with the money. I think Frank would want to come back here, but I wonder whether the Twins could afford him because he's going to be a $4 million ball player, and Mets might trade him. You know, things aren't going that well. Frankie did have a little slump there. I think he's 8-5 right now. But if they could get him back, there's no doubt in my mind it would assure 2-3 pennants in a row for the Twins, in my opinion.
Okay.
Yeah, I said, Jerry Homer, as Fargo, welcome. What's the status of our all-time favorite Viking, Jim Marshall?
I don't know exactly what's happened to Jim Marshall. He's on a pension, and I haven't seen him around lately, but we're hoping to get him in the Hall of Fame one of these days. It's funny, I'm on this committee, and I try every session to do something with these Viking guys, and I've got a lot of guys who like to get them in, but the stigma of losing those four Super Bowls is something that a lot of these voters just won't forget. And if you look at the guys who get in that Hall of Fame year after year, the Pittsburgh guys and the Green Bay guys, and our people who played on winning teams in the Super Bowl. And but I think we'll eventually get Jim Marshall in.
Okay.
All right. I'm a big Viking fan, and I'd like to have your opinion on the Vikings' Plan B guys, what are going to make the team, and the rookies what make the team. And I would like to find out if you think, since the Super Bowl's in Minnesota, do you think Minnesota can start to kick some butt?
Yeah. Well, if I knew what Plan B guys are going to make the team, what rookies make the team, I wouldn't be doing this. But I don't know. There'll be some Plan B guys. They got a couple safeties.
Well, Felix Wright is a heck of a...
Felix Wright and the another safety. What's the other safety's name?
I don't know. The only one I can think of right
two,
now is Wright.
Two safeties they picked up in a Plan B, I think, will make the team. And Wilcox, that's the guy. And they got some pretty good rookies. They got that Reed kid. They got a linebacker from Michigan State. It'll be interesting to see what happens.
Okay, I got two questions for you. One, do you think Roger Maris will get in the Hall of Fame? And two, is Scott Erickson's arm okay? Is it getting tired?
Scott who?
Erickson.
Erickson. Well, we're hoping Roger gets in the Hall of Fame. He certainly deserves to get in the Hall of Fame. But, see, I'm not a great booster of the way they vote this Hall of Fame thing. Although Roger can get into the old-timers committee, I think I'll have to vote him in. And I think he's got a good shot with those people because they all like them. They knew him. But you got about 15 writers voting on this Hall of Fame, and even though some of them written baseball for 6, 7, 8 years, they never saw a lot of these old-timers play, and it's hard for them to vote correctly. As far as Scott Erickson, he was due for a game like that, and, you know, the pressure last night, 50,000 people, his mother and grandmother in the audience, and everybody, that's why 50,000, a lot of those 50,000 came to see him pitch, and he wasn't very lucky last night. If he had some real good luck, he could have done all right, but as I mentioned earlier on the show, there's something about that Metrodome when it's really hot in there and you have a full house. The ball sails and the White Sox were hitting the ball up in the air and hit it the right place. Junior Artis hit a pop fly and almost went out of the park.
Sid, there's about a minute to go and we've got a number of people in line. Remind people we'll be back at 11:05 with the Tom Kelly Show. And again, we'll take questions from our live audience here in Fargo. So if you don't get on this segment, there'll be more opportunities after 11. Yes?
That was going to be my question, too, about Maris. When will he get in the Hall of Fame?
Well, it's the old-timers committee now. I think he's ineligible to be voted in. We just have to see what happens. I know I'm doing what I can behind the scenes.
Well, good morning, Sid. In all the years I've read your column, you've always seemed to focus on high school athletes and what are they going to be doing. When Roger Maris was in high school in Fargo, were you aware of him, or was this scoop missed?
I knew about him. I mean, I used to write some stuff about Roger, and I remember writing when he accepted a scholarship, and right after he wrote, he accepted the bonus from the Cleveland Indians. At that time, the Cleveland Indians, if I recall correctly, had a farm club, Northern League farm club in Fargo Moorhead. And Cy Slapnicka was the guy. He was their chief scout, and he signed Roger for very little money.
Sid, we're going to wrap up this segment right here. We've enjoyed this, and we're going to take a break. Then we'll be back here. We're live from Fargo. We'll continue. You're listening to the Sports Huddle with Sid and Dan.